Alrighty, hello everyone. Welcome back to another episode of The Podfather. This week we are on location at the studio of Melbourne and soon-to-be Australian famous band La Fleur.
Hello.
Yeah, that's right.
How you doing?
We've got some special guests. More people than we've ever had in the room today.
And a dog.
And a dog.
And a dog.
So we're here with Lani and Bud. Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having us. Stoked to be here.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about your band up top?
Yeah, sure. So we're local to Melbourne. There's six of us and we play some funky music. Some funky music. There's a little bit of pop sprinkled in there and some West Coast.
We're very funky. And we just brought out our new single, The Sands of Time.
So did you really?
Yes, it just came out on Friday.
Where can I listen to that?
You can listen to that on Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal, if anyone has Tidal.
Oh, you're on Tidal?
Yeah, we're on Tidal.
We're on all of the streaming platforms.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Well, I listened to it the other day. It's fantastic. So if you haven't listened to it, to our three listeners, please listen to it. And if you haven't seen La Fleur play live and you live in Melbourne, please see their next gig. They're going on tour over the summer.
Yes, but they'll be back.
And Lani and Bud also do some gigs by themselves. So we'll include all the links and stuff to follow them. Jordan and I have known Lani for a very long time.
Very long time.
We go way back.
Mm-hmm. 10 years.
Yeah, way back. Wow. I can't believe it's been 10 years
10
now.
10 years,
That's actually insane.
Well, I just wanted to say on behalf of me and Jordan and all of our friends, thank you for bringing Bud into our lives. Because I know Lani has been enriched by his presence, but I think we all have.
The gift.
That keeps on giving, right?
And the reason why we have La Fleur on today, the resident disco authorities, is because we're doing a movie called Disco Godfather.
Yep.
Which we'll talk about soon. But before that, we did want to do a little bit of follow-up on Joker.
Yes.
Now, have you guys seen Joker?
No.
You've avoided
I've heard the hype. Like, heaps of people said it was, like, amazing, but then also heaps of people said it was, like, trash. So I'm just...
It was pretty divisive.
Over here.
We both didn't like it.
We didn't like it.
Really?
Yep. And
interesting.
Two episodes ago, we spoke about it.
Yep.
And we did get some feedback from a few people. Mari, Laura and Paula, listeners, disagreed with us and thought that it was a good film.
Well, they're just wrong.
And I think that we, coming from our background in film and stuff like that, we didn't enjoy it. And I think that if you do have the knowledge of the films that came before it, you probably won't enjoy it as much. But that's not fair because most people going to see this movie probably haven't seen Taxi Driver and things like that. So, you know, I wanted to just say that, yes, it probably is the right film for some people.
I think if you enjoy the show Friends, you probably like the Joker.
Roasting everybody.
Actually, everyone I've spoken to in the real world has told me how much they liked it and how important the movie is for representation of mental health. Go fuck yourself. But I can't say that because I don't want to just be that wanker that's like contrary and all that shit.
That's the thing. And I've had people another friend of ours, Chris, told me the only reason why I didn't like it was to be cool. And I was like, that's not true. I just don't like it.
Yeah.
But
I feel like you guys should be entitled to that opinion though.
Like, that's what I said. I'm allowed to have my fucking opinion.
But the fact is it's made $1 billion. People seem to like it. So, you know, maybe... Well, I mean, we're not wrong, but, you know, maybe other opinions
there exist. There is or isn't a sequel in the works.
Yep, that's exactly right. There is or there isn't.
There might be.
There might maybe.
So we might have to bring it up again in the future.
Oh,
I can never get past Jack Nicholson as the Joker.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's the right answer.
That's the right answer.
He's the man. And Prince soundtrack too. Boom.
That's exactly right.
That's right.
And he couldn't list that soundtrack on his shirts, on his merch, though, because of the rights. Oh. And because Batman itself is a trademarked word.
Yes.
So he couldn't list it on his tour merch shirt.
Yeah,
he had a shirt that had all of the albums on it, but he had to leave off Batman.
And that's the one with Kiss from a Rose or not?
No. That's the Batman next one. Forever.
Right.
Which had Seal.
Right. So the first first Batman printed a soundtrack and then they did the... Batman Forever with Seal.
With Seal.
Okay.
Yep.
Are they merge into one movie, those ones, I feel like, in my head.
I think they merge into two movies, the Burton ones and then the shit
Burton
ones.
Yeah.
I can dig that.
I don't know if either of you ever listened to the podcast, and it's fine if you haven't.
Yes, we have. Yes,
well,
we
you would know that we do a little a little segment called Arnott's Time or the Biscuit Corner.
Yes.
I've been most excited for this part.
So, hence my question earlier about dietary requirements. So, we've got a little biscuit here. It's Arnott's staple. Tina wafer. Have you ever had these?
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, I used to have them in my lunchbox all the time.
Why are they called Tina wafer?
There's a picture of Tina. What's the goss? Tina Arena.
Wait, actually?
No, I don't think so. Arena.
Well, we just went to Coles and I said, what's the funkiest, discoest biscuit we can find? And so I gravitated towards the Tina wafer because of Tina Arena or Tina Turner.
Yeah. I'm vibing.
So we can pretend that's why that's what it's called.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm going to read you the little description. We don't normally do this, but I'm going to today. Say hello to your biscuity best friend with Tina's yummy, light and crispy cream-filled wafers in scrumptious raspberry, vanilla and chocolate flavors.
Ooh.
So there's three different flavors. Now that I think about it, this is a poor choice. Are we going to all have to try all three?
No, we'll just try different ones.
All right. All right.
So does Blake want one?
We'll pass them around.
And now, the only problem I often find with wafer biscuits...
I think you've got your answer, Blake. He does want one.
Like, the way that they're packaged...
Yeah, it's rough.
They're just loose inside of the plastic. They need to have, like, I feel like they should have a little tray. But they're all loose and they get messy, and then when you grab one, you break them.
They used to come in a tray, I think, back in the day.
Where's the tray, man?
I don't know.
Most biscuits come in trays, little plastic trays. Yeah. I mean, they're probably not good for the environment.
So I've got biodegradable wafer trays.
Biodegradable. It could come in a wafer tray that you could eat later.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh. If you're listening.
Yes.
That's good.
All right. Wait, what flavor? I got vanilla.
Strawberry.
I got strawberry.
It's raspberry, actually. But I always thought it was strawberry until I just read then that it was raspberry. And I've got chocolate. Cheers, everybody.
Cheers.
They're very good. Primary school to me.
I'm pretty good.
I'm always blown away at how creamy these ones are, actually.
I'm not a fan.
Why not? Why don't you like it?
It is so sweet. It's like, very sweet. It makes sense that you had it in like your primary school lunchbox, George, because this is just like sugar.
I'm not sure. What's the difference between this Tina wafer and a normal wafer?
Well,
you can taste the longer ones. Yeah, I think it's just.
Oh, sorry. We almost had a fifth guess then. My Siri.
Was Siri answering the question? Siri, hey Siri, what's the difference between a Tina wafer and a normal wafer?
Well, I think that the normal wafers are more like finger shaped. These ones were squares. That's the only difference I can tell, to be honest.
So Tina's a square.
Tina's a square. Other wafers are more finger shaped.
Yeah, and I feel like other wafers are like more neutral in the sugar level. I don't know.
That was very high sugar.
Yeah.
I think that if you were to buy a maybe classier, more expensive, more European imported wafer, it wouldn't be as sugary. I'm very, very thirsty now, actually, after that.
I've got a little joke for you before we continue. I just remembered it from my childhood also. Why was the biscuit upset?
Why?
Because its mother had been away for a while. There you go. All right. If you had to rate that biscuit out of 10, what would you rate it?
3.
3. Oh, goodness me.
3. A strong 3.
What about you, bud?
I'd give it a 6.
A 6?
Solid 6.
So that's a Lafleur score of 4.5. And then now for the Podfather score.
We are separate people.
I'd give it a probably a 5.
I'm going to give it a 7.
Wow.
So that's a Podfather score of 6. For the Tina wafer.
Okay.
Which is on the lower side, actually. It's second last on our list for the Tina wafer. Also, Tim Tam mangoes have a score of 6.
Tim Tam mango?
If you're going to eat a Tina wafer...
Lani's like, what is a Tim Tam mango? Hey, listen, sometimes we watch obscure films and sometimes we eat obscure biscuits.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, if you're going to watch a movie with a 6 out of 10 biscuit... You'd want to watch a 6 out of 10 movie like Get Carter. Disco Godfather, 1979, sort of at the tail end of the blaxploitation film movement, starring Rudy Ray Moore as, what was his name? Williams.
Disco Godfather.
As the Disco Godfather.
They just called him Godfather, right?
No, he has a name.
He definitely has a name.
We've already failed.
Tucker Williams.
Yeah.
Tucker
Williams. Yeah. Okay. I was on the right.
What did you think?
First impressions.
First impressions. Yeah. It was incredible. Like, obviously, it's not a very good movie. But that aside, I just love that it was just so ridiculous, you know. Had a lot of the classic features that, you know, one would find in a, you know, those kind of movies.
Bud?
Yeah.
It was very late 70s B movie.
Bit of a coke film.
I had it, yeah, a lot of cocaine. Too much, really. And, yeah, I think I liked the Angel of Death sequences the best.
Yeah, I only knew
that that lady was called that because I saw it in the credits.
Oh,
was she the one with like the...
Yeah,
like
the monster
thriller
thing.
Looking girl.
Yeah, yeah. Like the bad trip.
And that reminded me a bit of the Acid Queen from Tommy.
Yes!
So that made me happy. Yes, and then the rest of it I just kind of giggled. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think I'm really glad that we got you guys on through this. So we found this one in the book, right?
No, you found it.
No, I found it.
I don't know how you found it.
Shit,
but you
I don't know how I found it either.
He sent me a message that said, we got to do this. And it just, the poster, Disco Godfather. And then the synopsis. So that's what sold me.
Right.
Because it is a crime movie.
I can't remember how I found it. I don't know. But anyway, we found it. And I thought, oh, you know, this would be great for Lani and Bub because obviously it's, you know, it's got the music and stuff, which they really enjoy. But I also just kind of knew that you guys would find it, based on the trailer, I thought you'd be the right people to speak to about it because I think you'd get what it was.
Yeah.
Mm. And I think that most people who watch this, and I guess we'll let you know if you should watch it or not later, most people who watch this will think it's like a bit hard to follow and dumb and they won't really understand it, I think, because I think it's very dated. But really interesting too. And we haven't done really... We've done Jackie Brown, which is the closest we've got to blaxploitation, and that is obviously influenced by blaxploitation and was sort of meant to be like a blaxploitation film with Pam Grier, who was big in the scene. Yeah. But this is our first original blaxploitation film, and it seems that there's actually a lot of films we can do from this genre, I think.
Yeah.
There's a lot of gangster films. There's just one called The Black Godfather, I think, as well.
Yeah.
So there's... I'm very excited about this discovery.
There's some bangers.
Have you guys seen many or any?
No, but we were looking up all the titles just to see, like, what other kind of movies. Yeah. There was a Blackula as well.
Yeah, Blackula, Blackenstein.
Yeah.
Yep. There's all kinds of classics.
And I think we should clarify for people who don't know, blaxploitation doesn't mean... It doesn't mean exploitation in a negative way. It's more of a celebration, I would say. Mm-hmm. And exploitation cinema is just really genre cinema. So this is a wave of cinema in the 70s where black people in America just got to actually make films pretty much all with black people. They were represented. They weren't maybe the most polished or Hollywood-y type things, but they've become a place in cult cinema, basically.
And that was kind of the point, was they were intentionally... B movies because they were playing on all the tropes and stuff of all the genres, like you said. So it was just a way for African Americans to see themselves on screen. And we won't get in too much of a discussion about, you know, because some people think it was a really good thing because there was representation, but other people thought or think that it sort of reinforced white stereotypes of African people in America. But this film came sort of, like I said, at the tail end of the movement in 1979. The movement was kind of over. So this movie's just fucking fun. It's not really saying anything except drugs are bad.
Yeah.
Ooh, and I think watching this film, I got the impression that it's probably not the best example of the genre either. I think there's probably better ones. Yeah. Like the more classics, like Dolomite and Sharp.
Which is the same actor.
Yeah.
And there's a new movie on Netflix with Eddie Murphy playing Rudy Ray Moore, talking about the discovery of the Dolomite character.
Oh.
I started watching it this morning.
So is that not a remake of the old film?
It's the story of
Rudy Ray. Right. Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, everyone should probably watch that.
Yeah,
I watched the first little bit.
Well, maybe watch that and you might see the context for this film a little bit better, perhaps.
Mm.
Well, let's talk about the plot a little bit.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, it's this ex-cop who's now a DJ / local celebrity called the Disco Godfather. And the whole first 11 minutes of the movie is just people dancing in the disco club.
Yeah.
No plot.
Which was awesome. I loved the intro.
There was
pretty epic. It was.
It was also very long.
It was so long.
It went for a long time, yeah. And he's just calling out things to people.
Oh, put your weight on it.
Put your weight on it. Yeah. Yeah, that's the big one. That happens about 20 times.
And then his nephew, Bucky, takes some PCP or angel dust. Has some wild hallucinations, makes a big fool of himself, but really worries his uncle something terrible.
Yeah.
What have you done, Bucky? What have you done? He goes to the hospital, and then it's up to the Disco Godfather to use his old cop connections to try and stamp out this angel dust phenomenon within the community.
Yeah.
And that's basically the plot.
That's basically the plot.
And then there's a lot of dancing and martial arts.
Yeah.
There's a lot of martial arts.
Yes. And I think that might be something that we, having not seen many of these films, I think it must be a given that they just know kung fu.
Yeah.
I think that might be one of the things.
I've really thought about that. I noticed
like, in the credits at the beginning, it was like, or like karate moves and like, I was like, okay. So there's going to be a lot of this.
Yeah, so that's kind of the story.
I thought that this was similar to a movie we watched recently, To Kill a Sunrise. I thought this was a pretty good plot and story that maybe if it got remade could be like a really engaging and interesting film.
Yeah.
Because it tackles an interesting issue, and they don't really go very deep into much stuff in this other than the psychosis.
Not really deep into it. It's just
pretty deep into it, but
you know, artily made scenes. But like in terms of the impact of it,
if someone could rewrite this film with much better writing, with more interesting characters and all that kind of stuff, I think it could be like a really cool movie. In my opinion, so I like the story.
Cooler than this?
Well, maybe not cooler than this, but maybe just better.
I'd have to find a more modern drug too. Angel dust just doesn't cut.
Does anyone have any experience with that?
No.
Do people still do it? Can you do that now?
Did PCP like transition to crack? I think like afterwards. So
yeah, right.
I think that's probably.
So it was like, it was the cheap psychedelic of the time or something like that?
Yeah, there was a pretty bad epidemic in the 70s, especially, you know, affecting like poorer communities and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Well, good on Rudy Ray Moore then for really
raising
awareness.
Yeah, I was actually quite surprised. Like considering like the style of movie and all of that, like the underlying message, although maybe not conveyed the best way it could be, was just pretty interesting that it like kind of tackled it, I guess.
Yeah, well, I think they were aware that that was a big deal at the time.
Mm.
It reminded me of, and I can't remember which one it was, but what was the one, The King of New York, or what was the one that we watched that was about crack in the 90s?
King of New York.
King of New
Chris
York.
Walken, yeah.
With
right?
Chris Walken.
Yeah.
Have you guys seen that movie?
A long time ago, yeah.
Was it the best movie you've ever seen?
It's pretty good, isn't it?
It's actually pretty low on our list.
I think it's one of our worst. But
yeah, got 4.25. But that doesn't mean it's...
But that was a similar thing where they were dealing with that issue at the time.
Was that New Jack City that dealt with that too?
Oh, maybe it was New Jack City. Which was... I don't know if you'd call that a blaxploitation film, but...
No, but it's certainly dealing with the African-American community.
And that was New Jack Swing's the style of music too. So there's a bit of parallels there, I think.
There you go.
Maybe New Jack Swing is influenced by Disco Godfather.
Maybe.
Yeah.
We're finding connections.
Yeah.
It all links up.
So what do we think about Rudy Ray Moore as a leading man?
He looks cool.
He's got some killer outfits. Like you
really
can't deny his fashion.
He looks amazing. That's
it's
very
incredible.
True.
Incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not a great actor.
No.
But that's the point, I think. He only made like 6 films. The guy that wrote and directed this only made this film.
Yeah.
Dang.
Yeah. But Rudy Ray Moore, I think, is just so watchable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's almost
charismatic.
Yeah.
It's almost like it's so bad that it's amazing. It's the best thing you might have ever seen in your life. When he's like, Bucky, what have you done? Like,
oh, it's so good.
Well, I thought that Frank, who plays the police guy, quite frankly, so much worse than anything else. I think maybe I thought Rudy was great.
I 100%
agree
Frank's
with that.
Problem is,
and when he had his little monologue bit and he stares into the camera.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but he kind of doesn't look right. He's like he's just a bit off center.
Yeah, yeah, it makes you feel awkward. Honestly, was like, has this guy ever acted?
Yeah, and yeah.
Honestly, probably not.
Probably
yeah,
not.
Yeah, I don't think he has.
So he goes on a mission to fix the PCP epidemic. And spoilers, he does. He busts the people in town making it all with some sick kung fu. Although.
But not without having a taste of the angel himself.
So there's this one quite scary moment where one of the big bullies from the drug dealing people like tie him into a chair and put a gas mask on him and like force feed him PCP.
The big boss guy. Yeah. Yep.
Which I thought was like pretty intense. Mm. And then he goes through, and this is not the first time in the film, but this is sort of the long one, but they go through a little bit of a drug trip where and it happens to his nephew.
Bucky,
because he's a basketballer and he has all these like things about being able to
make his shots hand and all that.
His hand gets chopped off and it's all like, and I actually really like these shots because I think it's like doing like drug sequences or dream sequences or like things like that in film, it's like, you know, how do you do it? But I think this might have been one of the better parts of the film was those moments because like they were eerie and weird and like felt like they didn't make much sense, but you know, they were a bit disorienting.
Yeah, they were weird.
And they were theatrical. And they were using the medium in an interesting way. Like even if it wasn't polished, it's something that people should take more risks with that sort of thing, I think. Instead of just like the camera shaking a little bit, like which they do as well. Like, shoot something in a fucking black room with
weird
angels of death.
And that's what's interesting about like B-movies and stuff is like use what's available to you because in a big Hollywood movie, especially nowadays, I mean, you can make a drug or dream sequence just, you know, with fucking computer plugins or whatever effects. But this was, you know, they had to be done a bit more creatively, and I think that was, I think, refreshing to see.
Yeah.
As opposed to the cinema of now. Maybe that's just because I'm like an old man and I like those old things better, but I like that.
Yeah, they kept playing the same weird four high notes over and over again too. It was driving me crazy.
It sounded like a ringtone a little bit in the background. I like checked my phone so many times.
That's what your phone sounds like when you're on Angel Dog.
Bucky.
Oh, Bucky. He starts crying for his mum at the end too, remember?
Yes.
During the trip.
And then it turns into his auntie and then I couldn't work out what was going on after that.
And then it just ended.
Then it
just ended.
With some disco
music. It wasn't
music.
A happy ending.
We really had to sit with that, you know? But we assume he's okay in the end, right? The Disco Godfather.
I guess. I guess he would have had to go to the hospital for a bit and
detox.
What if
he never comes back?
I guess. I assume Bucky made a recovery, you know.
That's true.
He should be fine.
That's true.
Bucky made it back.
Yeah.
And what did you guys think of, you mentioned the sound in the dream sequence or the drug sequence. What did you think of the actual, like the normal music, the disco music?
The soundtrack
music?
was actually great.
Yeah, it was written for... This was like a soundtrack thing.
It had some like top players actually on the soundtrack.
Oh, here we go. They've done a bit of homework.
Did some digging into the soundtrack of this. It's a one-off band. Never got used again. Really good players, but they called themselves Juicy People Unlimited.
That's a good name.
The drums. The drums, you've got James Gadson, who played with Bill Withers on like
everything.
Bill Withers
like
song.
Lovely Day and everything.
Yeah, everything.
That's one of my favourite songs in the whole world.
He's one of my favourite
drummers.
If
you watch Bill Withers' film clips, he looks like an awesome dude and he's got all gold teeth and he just smiles all the time.
Awesome.
He also plays with D'Angelo now too.
Really?
Oh shit.
Yeah, he's like 70 or something too.
Nice.
But he's on the last D'Angelo album. The bass player, he was in The Emotions for a bit, and Cheryl Lynn as well. The guitar players, I'm a guitar player, so I freaked out.
But this guitar player is like
the
guitar player.
The funk guitar man, Paul Jackson Jr., who plays the guitar on Thriller. Everything anyone from Toto on that album is him. He also played on the last Daft Punk album, all Luther Vandross, Boz Scaggs, George Benson. He plays with everyone. The other guitar player is Rick James's guitar player.
Yeah. I know, it just keeps getting better and better.
What the hell?
The connections here run deep. And then the percussion, you've got Melvin Webb, who's from the Gap Band, Marvin Gaye, Janet Jackson. It's just crazy.
So all stars. You just crazy, you said that's band. A one-off band, but like I get the impression maybe that a lot of these films have probably great players. Probably,
well, yeah, they've probably done
other, I mean, because obviously yeah. Shaft has a famous soundtrack.
Yes.
But I'm now thinking, and I think we should probably look into it, but they probably all played on other movies as well.
Oh, definitely.
Probably, yeah. Yeah, I guess. Like, most if of these a players, movie of yeah. this level has that kind of players on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like,
and where then, were they? Like, yeah. were they just players then? Like, they didn't they, have
I
these
think they would have just been, like, pretty much, the, yeah, guys. The top yeah. session yeah. players. Yeah. So
just classic LA.
Just guns for hire, yeah, really.
Exactly. So yeah. it's like, oh, it's a gig.
Yeah.
It
yeah,
doesn't
yeah,
matter if it's just you, Rudy Ray Moore.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I reckon it would have been a gig, but I get the impression that it probably would have been also just like part of that. They would have known each other.
Totally.
And like, oh, you know, come in and
probably,
do this.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And like, because obviously with a film like Disco Godfather, you want there to be an element of the soundtrack that is part of the film.
Yeah.
Because it's he's a DJ and it's in the title.
Yeah.
And yeah, that it was good to sort of hear that throughout it, mm. to have mm. that pushing it along.
It was pretty cool.
Especially in the dance sequences.
Oh, that's right.
It really reminded me of, I don't know if any of you saw any of the Get Down on
oh,
Netflix.
Oh, that was that Netflix show.
Yeah.
No, I haven't watched it
I watched
it
the
yet.
First season. I didn't watch the second season because it got cancelled, so I just gave up.
Right.
But it looked exactly like the Get Down, which
nice.
Makes me think the Get Down was a good representation of that era because that's like late 70s as well.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
like, and I don't know, I just wish that we still had discos like that.
I agree. I agree. Yeah, I stand this movement.
It's true.
More
it's
discos.
True.
Bring them back.
Yeah, more discotheques.
Well, mm-hmm. At your gigs, mm-hmm. just to give you a plug, that's the most fun I ever have at a gig.
Oh,
because you get to
God.
Dance.
It's
yeah.
true.
And that's like, but like dance. Like,
yeah.
Hard
you know,
dance.
Like,
move your body.
You can just sort of shimmy at any old gig, but it's like, there's something about like disco music, funk that
yeah.
gets people moving in different ways that maybe they
yeah.
Didn't know they could, you know?
You know? It's true.
Sounds like you've had
it's
a few experiences
true.
At LaFleur gigs.
Oh,
I've
yeah.
had a few experiences.
Many.
I brought a date to a LaFleur gig once. She wasn't the one. But the gig was excellent.
Yeah, there you go.
That was a good gig. That was a good gig. I remember that one.
What else do we have to say for Disco
well,
Godfather?
I'd like to reference a book called Blaxploitation Films. It came out in 2001 and then there was another edition in 2010 by our good friend Michael J. Coven.
What's the backstory on Michael Coven for people who don't know?
So for people that don't know, when we started the podcast 3.5 years ago, we got in touch with some of the contributors of 101 Gangster Movies You Must See Before You Die.
Cool.
We would just email them and ask them questions. And we actually had quite an ongoing correspondence with Michael Coven, who wrote a few of the entries. So I can't remember what movie we were talking about that was the impetus for this, but he told us about this book that he'd written. He's written a few books about so this book is obviously about blaxploitation films, but he'd written a bunch of books about horror movies and other sort of genre movies. So he's a really cool guy, actually. And it's a shame that we sort of had these big breaks that we have had because we sort of lost touch with him. And I
yes.
think it would be too weird now to email him again.
Nah, we'll get back in touch with him.
having said that, I do have his book, Blaxploitation Films, and he writes a little bit about Rudy Ray Moore.
Right.
Of course. He's talking about the movie Dolomite here, but I think... pretend that I'm talking about this movie.
Yep.
Because his thoughts kind of on that reflect mine on this. Dolomite is a difficult film for the uninitiated. On the surface, it is perhaps one of the worst made films ever. And worthy of being included as a classic of bad cinema along with the collected works of Ed Wood Jr. Ooh. However, as with Moore's other films, like this one, the joke is in its badness. It's sending up the already getting long in the tooth blaxploitation genre. So basically, if blaxploitation is sending up genre tropes already, these Rudy Ray Moore movies are sending up the tropes that are sending up the tropes. You know what I mean?
And I think that's the point, because at no point do you not realize that this is self-aware. Like, I think from the beginning, you're like, oh, yeah, they know what they're doing. It's
totally.
not like
The Room.
Yes, it's not like The Room. And maybe, like, you know, people love Ed Wood stuff these days. You know, it's been so long. But maybe Ed Wood stuff is not intentionally like that. Like The Room is not intentionally like that. But I think this film and maybe a lot of blaxploitation films are intentionally genre-y, like you said, making fun of things or just kind of using it to their strengths.
That would explain their knowledge of kung fu to the highest degree.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to do your research, bud, because it's commonly known that kung fu is just a very popular American tradition.
Yeah, true. Did anyone notice the final boss? He's more of a sumo style too.
Did anyone notice?
He's doing that stomp dancing.
Yeah.
And he just kind of stands there. And then gets kicked in the face and nothing happens.
Yeah, and they throw a spanner at his head and he doesn't...
There's multiple Eastern traditions represented in one fight scene.
Well, that was actually a great moment when that big boss came out. And it's funny you say it like that because that's exactly how it felt. It felt like watching someone play a video game.
Yeah, totally.
The final boss.
Yeah. And then it turned out he wasn't the final boss. There was more bosses.
Yeah.
You've seen some. You like kung fu movies? You've actually seen a lot of them.
I've seen a fair few.
Yeah, because I actually haven't.
Yeah, there's some. Good
I've seen
ones.
A few, like you know, Bruce Lee and stuff. But yeah, I remember, like, when I was like a kid.
Oh yeah,
like,
Bruce Lee ones are all awesome.
Did you feel like this was comparable in choreography and, or it was more just fun?
No, it's not. It's not quite Bruce Lee level. No, I don't think so. But like, look, what is.
Yeah, that's so true, though.
Did you see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
No.
No, but
I'd be interested to hear your thoughts on the Bruce Lee sequence in that, actually.
Oh.
We had a bit of a chat with our guest on that episode about that.
So there was a little bit of unrest in the Bruce Lee community for how Tarantino treated him.
Really?
In this film. Yeah.
Interesting.
Good movie, though. You should watch it.
Yeah.
Very good movie.
Cool.
And then listen to our episode
and then tweet us and we'll put some in listener feedback.
All right.
So, you know, obviously we're talking about this from the lens of understanding that it's a exploitation genre type film.
Yeah.
Do they still exist, genre, like films like that? Like, you know, do we still have exploitation cinema? I mean, I guess horror is a good example, but I kind of get the impression that these days movies are far more homogenized in a way where they do obviously have influences, but it just like I feel like if a movie like this came out today, it just wouldn't be accepted because we're not like I don't know like what do you think?
Well, like they did a Shaft remake last year or something,
which is on Netflix as well, right?
They did.
But did anyone see it?
No.
Like,
no,
but I don't mean anyone in this room. I mean, did anyone see it? Like, maybe it's part of the Netflix problem, but it felt like that came and then very quickly left.
Yeah, totally. I remember hearing it was coming out and then I never heard that it came out.
Yeah.
But I guess it did.
Yeah. So no, I think that's what would happen.
Yeah, right.
Frankly.
Yeah.
That's not to say, like, sort of representation of African Americans is not happening. I mean, it's probably not happening as much as it should, but you know, like a film like Moonlight, for instance, which won the Oscar a few years ago, like it's obviously a very different sort of film and it's a serious film. But I think people are starting to tell stories and see representation in a different way that's not as maybe pulpy as this.
Mm-hmm. Well, but even just like whether it's blaxploitation or a kung fu film or a Western or a like even a gangster film, I guess, like I feel like they're less obvious. And maybe it's the lens of retrospect, but they feel less obvious now than maybe they used to. Like they used to be a bit more boxed off. Like, yeah, like it was definitely a spaghetti Western or whatever.
Yeah.
Or like it was definitely a kung fu movie. Has that shifted now, do you think?
You know,
or is it just that we'll look back in 20 years and be like, oh, yeah, that was like a classic mid-2000s whatever.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think they are fewer and far between. Like, when was the last time? Like, for instance, pirate movies were a big thing.
Oh, that was a big
back
thing.
In the day.
Oh, yeah.
And then Disney made the only successful pirate movie this century, basically.
Yeah.
What other pirate movies are there?
People tried to, like, make TV shows and stuff with pirates in them for a little bit in the
early to mid. Why aren't pirates
popular? I don't know. They're just not good for movies.
Nah.
Like even Disney ran their franchise into the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe we should
revive it. Maybe we should pitch a pirate show to Disney Plus or you know, or Netflix.
I don't know. Also, they're expensive to make and look good, you know.
Very true.
All the boat costs.
But yeah, no one makes like those anymore. But having said that, like when a war movie comes out, it's like, oh, this is a new war movie. That's still a thing.
That's still a thing,
war movies is full of thing.
Yeah. People still make war movies. Maybe that's the big... And horror, like you said. Maybe they're the
Maybe it's just what's in fashion.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're all superheroes at the moment.
Well, that's exactly...
Oh, superheroes. Yeah, that's
so true. All superheroes. But even then, I think within that, they have different genre... Like, because like Captain America is a bit of a war film, right?
Yes.
Yeah. And then Black Panther's probably like a blaxploitation film inside of the superhero. I mean, I haven't seen it, but... That was the impression I got.
Well, it certainly was, like a representation film.
Yeah.
Mm.
No more superhero. Can we do a disco superhero?
That would be
good. They need a disco superhero. There's too many superheroes. And as someone that hasn't seen any of the superhero movies, where the hell do you start? There's remakes and then there's 40 million. Like... What the hell's up with the Incredible Hulk? What do you do? Eric Banner or the other guy?
Who do you do?
Like the obvious answer is always going to be Eric Banner. Like, how can you stray? I don't know.
Well, I don't know. Why'd they get rid of him?
That was a standalone. Like, whereas the new ones, like Ed Norton made a movie that's still canon in the MCU, but he's not the Hulk anymore. It's Mark Ruffalo. The Hulk's an interesting one.
Mm.
But I always thought a good idea for a superhero would be like a drag queen superhero.
Mm,
wow.
I'm not the person to tell that story, but wouldn't it be good? Like, because they've already got an alter ego.
Mm,
they've already got, you know, costumes. Imagine a crime-fighting drag queen. Maybe someone's already done it. But, like, someone should make that movie.
Someone should make that movie. And they can have, like, a really... Because, you know, as we've been talking about lately, they're all trying to do really interesting origin films like Joker. Maybe the drag queen could just get superpowers from, like, a off... lipstick or something. Like just
there you go.
Like radioactive lipstick, you know, just give it some cheesy superhero thing and then all of a sudden she can fly.
Like that would make an excellent John Waters movie.
Yes.
John Waters is a good thing to bring up because this is kind of like a campy this movie Disco Godfather has a lot of like camp elements to it.
Mm.
But with its budget and the theatrics of it. It sort of reminded me of watching a John Waters movie. Mm. I don't know if any of you have seen any of those, but...
I haven't.
They're really, like, trashy fun.
It feels that 70s style,
Oh, I kind of... The more I think about this movie, the more I like it retrospectively. But, it took me two sittings to watch it.
Oh, really?
Two sittings.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, because the plot didn't start until like 40 minutes in.
Yeah.
Nothing was happening.
But I mean, like Bucky happened like straight away.
Yeah, no, that's true. Like... But then they just sort of were like, drugs are bad for like another 20 minutes.
There's a lot of anti-drug propaganda.
Yeah.
Like a lot.
But then like this morning I finished it and I started at 42 minutes in. And
you were captivated.
The second half It picks up. The bad guy gets to do some real mugging to camera.
You know,
there's that bit where someone's explaining, they're after us, and he's sort of smiling and waving at this party that he's at. Oh, that was great acting.
Listeners, you got to watch it. I'm panicking, burning things in a bin on his desk.
Oh, what about...
I don't know if you should light that fire.
What bit is it? That bit where the boss, like, hires the hitman to get... Rudy Ray Moore, and he's a cowboy.
What's going on with that?
Like this giant, like 6 foot whip. I'm like, where did you get the whip
from?
The urban cowboy
just kicking off.
All the tropes.
He just like hits him once, and his like, blood splatters all over the fence.
Hits him into the wall.
That one punch, and his face is just covered in blood.
Yeah, he got absolutely destroyed.
I honestly really like that.
I thought it was great.
There's some great fake blood in this movie.
That cowboy outfit too.
Yeah.
He was like a proper cowboy.
Where did you come from?
Yeah.
Also, I liked how after that you could see faint blood splatters on the wall behind where they'd clearly either rehearsed Yep. Or shot in a different spot earlier.
Uh-huh. And actually the scene does move locations. Like he's outside and then he's in a corner of the fence. Like,
I think that the lesson from this is like, I feel like most of Hollywood or the movie industry or the consumer or the people who make the films, most of them have kind of stepped away from all of this older stuff and said, oh, that's just trash. And then you have some people, like obviously Tarantino is probably the most obvious example. He has taken all the genre cinema of the 60s and 70s and turned it into something interesting. And I actually wish that more people would do that.
Yeah.
Because it is fun.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't shy away from it to have a good time. And I think that we, like, movie making has gotten to the point where you can have it be somewhat trashy or weird or like just kind of not make sense, but still have like a lot of depth. You can do it in a way that's not just crap. So I think that's the lesson. I think that we need to still look back to these movies, even if they weren't really a big deal at the time, or even if they weren't well made, or even if they weren't well acted or whatever. But like, use it. I think it's fun.
Yeah.
We need more fun. We need less really serious films like Joker. And more fun films.
It's going to be so nice when we can do an episode of this show and not talk about that fucking movie.
All right, should we give it some scores maybe?
Beforehand, I do want to just talk about, do you think it's a crime
film.
Movie or slash gangster movie that you should see before you die?
Ooh. I kind of do actually at this point.
Yeah.
Because having not seen much else of the genre, you know, like I said, I feel like there might be other ones that would be better. But at this point, yeah, I think you should see this because it's fun and it does have a good message. And you need to see things that aren't just, like, frankly, just Hollywood.
Yeah.
You got to see you got to see other stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
What about you, bud?
I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like watching those kind of things. Like, yeah. It was cool. I would definitely recommend it.
Lani?
Yeah, I definitely recommend it. I love 100%.
I love episodes where we talk about how shit something is and then just say, but you should fucking watch it.
No, you definitely should watch it. Yeah. I think that it will enrich your life and, it's incredible.
Put some weight on it.
Even if it's just some clothes.
Exactly.
Really,
if you just want some
suits.
Fashion inspiration, put on Disco Godfather and you are good to go.
And that's okay. And in a world where, and I've spoken about this before, in a world where there are so many, at the moment, 80s revival shows, for instance, like Stranger Things and Glow, which I love Glow at the moment.
I love Glow.
Did you finish season 3?
Yes.
Oh, my. So many times I was like so emotional.
Yeah.
but like, I often sit there and I think, oh, is this actually what they dressed and looked like, or is it our romantic memory of it?
Yeah.
And Disco Godfather was made in the time.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly how they dressed.
Yeah. They would have just worn their clothes off the street.
Yeah,
exactly.
Like,
if you want to be a retro naught in the world,
it's true.
Watch a film from the era, pick the clothes, rock it.
You know? Legit clothes. Rocket. There's a lot of things they miss when they do disco scenes now. They don't have those hats. You know those puffy kind of hats with the little peak? Every second person is wearing it in the movie. And then you watch a disco thing now.
And they're just
there's no
missing.
Puffy hats.
The only person I can think of that wears those hats in like popular culture is maybe Harry Styles will rock one every so often. He's got that sort
of
fashion sense.
Can't say I'm familiar with Harry Styles' fashion sense, but I'll believe you.
Honestly, Harry Styles' fashion. I love him.
From what I've seen, he's been looking pretty good lately.
He looks pretty good.
Okay.
And also, is it a gangster movie?
Enough. Yeah, I think so.
Yep.
Because, I mean, they don't. It's probably not a gangster film. It's gangster adjacent because obviously they deal with a crime syndicate who's selling the PCP. You don't find out a lot about them. I mean, they're really just low-level street dealers, basically.
Yeah.
So maybe that's not quite gangster, but I think it's implied that they're part of some kind of crime world.
And there's a rat and all sorts of
things.
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about that. That was hectic.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. That was probably the main part of the story.
Yeah, spoilers.
I forgot.
Spoilers for Disco Godfather.
that's what I meant about it being a good story. Like, that was a good little moment, I thought. And the way that they trick him by calling him and tell
Watch
the film.
Yeah, watch it, guys.
Yeah.
Let's give it some scores.
I will give it a strong 7.
7.
Ooh. Mostly out of the enjoyment, I reckon. Strong 7.
You know what? I was going to probably go for 7 as well. I think it's probably like a 3 out of 10 movie.
Yeah.
So those extra 4 points say a lot about just how fun this movie is.
Yeah.
So that means it's got a Podfather score of 7, and I'll discuss that in a second. But I want to hear the LaFleur score or the Lani and Bud score.
I'm going to go with a 7.8.
Oof.
Yeah.
Good. Yeah,
because like George said, you know, probably a 3 out of 10 for like the actual movie. But yeah, from all the points that we've spoken about before, just incredible, a must watch. So yeah, 7.8.
I love the decimal points. We haven't been doing decimal points as much recently.
No, I'm normally the one who
7.61.
So I think that was
I was
going to
go with 7.5, but I was like, no, it deserves more. But it's not quite an 8. You know,
good, exactly.
Love
exactly.
it.
Yeah.
Love it.
I would give it, I'm going to give it 2 for the movie.
Yeah.
1 for the leading man. 3 for the music. And then another 1 for the fashion. So I think that's 7.
That's 7.
That's a lot.
I
like the way you built it up too. Yeah. That was good.
So that means the two of you, 7.4. That's your combined score.
Not bad.
There you go. Now, let's go back to the Podfather score of 7. Let me tell you, we've got another movie called Going in Style, also from the same year, 1979.
Right.
On the same score. And it's above Outrage on 6.875 and below American Gangster on 7.25, as well as Bugsy Malone and True Romance.
When did we watch American Gangster? Is that the Russell Crowe one?
Yeah, we watched it and we had Ben Granger on. It was a phone call. It was a phone call one.
What?
While you were in London.
Did we put Ben on the phone as well?
Yes.
Something's just removed from your memory sometimes. That's amazing. I want to listen to that. Oh, God.
Oh, well, there you go.
Good job, guys. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for having us.
Maybe we'll have you back on in the future. If you have any movies you want to watch, let us know. Otherwise, next time something's a bit, you know,
yeah,
up
totally.
Your alley.
Or if you ever want us to talk about any soundtracks.
Well,
we
actually,
we're
going to do. We've got a couple of episodes in the works. I think we're going to do one on scores and one on soundtracks.
Sick.
Yeah.
So, or maybe a bit
of both.
So
I can give some more to the conversation.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's tee that up. We'll and I think we're like each going to pick a movie or something like that and go over the soundtrack. So,
cool.
Okay. Well, stay tuned for that, guys. Definitely. Maybe in the next couple of months. We are going to treat you now to the new LaFleur single, Sands of Time.
Yes.
So you can keep your podcast player playing.
Yeah, keep it on.
Find them on the internet. Find LaFleur on the internet, on Facebook, Instagram. Find us on Facebook, Twitter.
Yep.
Do your thing.
And tune in 2 weeks. We're going to do an episode on The Irishman. So watch it on Netflix in the meantime. It comes out on the 28th of November, I believe.
So on Netflix.
And
then I think our episode comes out about a week later, first week of December.
Something like that.
So, yeah, if you haven't seen The Irishman yet, please do. It's probably the film of the year.
Well, spoilers for our episode of The Podfather.
Well, you know. Watch it.
Take your
Keith David.
Who's he?
He's in a bunch of movies. Just look him up. I only know him from Agent Cody Banks.
Oh my god!
But he's quite he's quite a well-regarded actor.
Sick.